society. Previous polls on the Supreme Court after the fall of Roe have yielded similar rights. A Gallup poll last September found that approval of the Supreme Court was just 40%, tied with the record low first seen in 2021, while disapproval of the court was at a record high of 58%. These polls, however, were conducted before reporters uncovered a number of instances of extreme corruption from Supreme Court justices, specifically from Justice Clarence Thomas, who Chief Justice John Roberts has worked to shield in recent weeks. The scandal surrounding Thomas has made the public aware of what has amounted to an open secret among judicial experts, that corruption is much more common among court justices than the public knows, and that the justices have no interest in changing rules regarding corruption because it benefits them personally. If the polling were conducted after these revelations, it may have found an even dimmer view of the Supreme Court. Recent polling from The Economist and YouGov, conducted after the first bombshell ProPublica report on Thomas accepting lavish, undisclosed gifts from a Republican mega-donor, found that nearly 6 in 10 Americans disapprove of Thomas' choice to accept the gifts. Another poll, conducted around the same time by Demand Justice, found that 70% of Americans would support an investigation of ethical violations by Supreme Court justices. According to NPR, Americans don't tend to like either political party very much. A December NPR PBS NewsHour Morris poll found the parties were viewed nearly identically and in a negative light. Below the numbers, an intensity of dislike has grown. Over the last 30 years, members of both parties in the U.S. have been increasingly likely to express extremely negative views of the other political party. In 1994, only about one-fifth of Americans said they had a very unfavorable view of the other party. Last year, a Pew Research Center study found the majorities in each party said so.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Start. Movement. Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
بسم Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to your favorite program, that is Youth Station. Once more, I have the honor to be here at your service. And here with me, I have Brother Habib.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome. Thank you guys for joining us. And of course, she said it's the best program. Not sure about that.
Thank you for reminding everyone of that. And yes, how are you doing?
Thank you. Good. And how have been things minimal to you nowadays?
Oh, minimal. Since I studied literature, I am very much interested in the minimalistic point of views in writing and in whatever that is related to literature. So in art, when we say minimalism, we actually mean simplicity and avoiding all the unnecessary things.
Like, for example, in Arabic, al-bala and balagha, we have this term ijaz, right?
Yeah.
It's like to use as less words as possible.
To be laconic.
To have a lot of words, to have a lot of meanings in it.
Yeah.
What do you guys call that in linguistics, in the English language?
To be concise and
concise.
Laconic. Yeah.
Sometimes being minimal is good. I feel that it is.
Most of the time, I guess.
But as long as it gets your job done.
But, you know, in art, there's another point, there's another perspective to talk about it. When you use only one word in order to say all the meanings that you want to say, there might be some misunderstanding. Well, the same thing could not be applied in lifestyle. If you go for minimalism and lifestyle, there would be no misunderstanding. On the contrary, you would clarify everything for yourself and everybody around you.
Lifestyle, I don't know, but like, what are we talking about precisely when we say that lifestyle is minimal or not, and we're saying that it's bad or good?
Well, as in, if we want to define that, we would say that a minimal lifestyle is a lifestyle in which you're going to reduce the number of the things you have around you. Like, for example, if I want to make you have a picture of that, if I am the one who's practicing minimalistic lifestyle and you come to my home, then you're not going to see too much of chaos around me. Everything is just clarified. If I have, I don't know, one flower, there'd be only one basket of flour around me, not too many of them all around, or things just like that.
I don't know. I think that is good.
Of course.
Like only what you need you have, right?
Yeah.
There might be like to some extent where like the first aid kit, mm-hmm. right, for medicine.
Yeah.
You don't need it now. You may never need a bandage from now till maybe a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
But you still keep that bandage with you.
Yeah.
Is that considered not minimal? I see it as minimal.
Of course it is, yeah.
It's the but need. It goes back to the need.
I'm not sure that everybody would have the same idea about practicing a minimal lifestyle. You know, because to some people who has a very messy, brain, it cannot be so easy to have a very simple lifestyle that has been organized in the way that you keep only the things that you need.
Now, look, sometimes you want to try things.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Like, for example, having a swing in your house.
Mm-hmm.
Have you tried that?
No.
I've tried it. It was fun.
Yeah.
For the first few hours. And then after that, it's not fun no more. And you just want to get rid of it.
And it becomes something extra in the house.
It becomes, you're like hoarding things now.
Exactly.
You start to hoard on to things. For example, I have a family member that likes to hoard plastic bottles, to reuse plastic bottles.
Oh, wow.
So he just keeps them.
So considerate of them.
He doesn't use them. If he uses them, it will be considered, like minimal. Because he's using them, for example,
keep
for a pot.
Keep them for the rainy days.
Yeah, for projects, for whatever.
Yeah.
But he's not using them in that manner. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, nowadays, are we living minimal lives or not? I mean, this question just popped up to my mind.
Well,
like smartphones, are smartphones minimal?
It's a very good question, but I guess before we get into it, we'd have to go for a short break and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Yes, this is Youth Station, and you're still listening to IRIB English Radio. We're talking about minimal lifestyle, and then Brother Habib said that, are we practicing minimal lifestyle nowadays? And I have to say, economically speaking, we are forced to practice minimalistic point of view in as in lifestyle.
Maybe not. I don't know why the economy could be just like a blockade. But before that, I want to ask, like, are the things that we have nowadays,
yeah,
are they considered minimal or not? Like, we have smartphones. Can we live without smartphones?
Yeah, can we live without them? No, I guess. No, we can't. Half of the things we do are done with these small phones, so...
I still to this day know people who don't have smartphones.
Maybe they're living in a far-off corners
The guy's a lawyer.
He's a lawyer. Very I mean, nice. Like,
he's a lawyer. He doesn't have a smartphone.
So how is he going to connect with his...
He has the old Nokia phones.
Mm-hmm. You know, the... Still, he's got a cell phone.
Yeah, it's called Tabug in Iraqi. He has that phone. It works. Mm-hmm. He sends messages with it. He calls people. He's even with the, like the social media.
So still, he's using a cell phone.
Not a smartphone. I mean, like nowadays, if I was walking the other day in the United States, I was just looking at people. All their heads were on their phones.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone had an iPhone. Everyone had a Samsung.
Yeah.
There was nothing in between.
Because it has been a part of our life, you know. Many people are working with their cell phones. It's not just a matter of entertainment.
But is it a minimal or not? Is it a minimal or not? I had an example that I brought up.
Yeah.
You could say we could live without it.
Yes, I guess it is minimal. Because, you know, everything has been collected in one small little thing that you carry with yourself everywhere you go.
Maybe it's because your lifestyle maybe brings it up.
Maybe.
So your lifestyle is the one that that portrays... whether this thing is minimal or not.
Yeah.
So therefore, every person depends mm-hmm. from situation to situation. Again, this brings up the concept of zakat, for example.
And what is zakat?
Zakat, of course, almsgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 8 specific places where you could give your zakat. One of them being a poor person. So a man comes to Imam Sadiq, alayhi salam, and asks him. He tells him that this person that I want to give zakat to, he has 2 houses. He has servants. He mm-hmm. has this and that. Yet, he is considered to be the sheikh, the leader, the chief
of his
tribe, right? And you know the chief, you know the word of, you've heard the word diwan, right?
Yeah.
You know, the meaning of diwan, like it's the place where they sit down, where the entire family comes, people from outside the tribe come and sit down with the tribe
like
leader.
Like the gatherings
and chief.
Are held there.
He needs servants. Mm-hmm. He needs food. He always has people coming over, so he always has to have food. So, can I give the zakat to this person? Imam tells him that if this person needs this, it is his lifestyle, yes, give it to him.
Yeah.
So, therefore, every person, every human being's lifestyle, every person's own situation is what considers whether this person is living the minimal life or not. You could have, for example, a car, it could be minimal for you.
Because
you need, you could have 2 cars, 3 cars. For me, I don't need a car. So the minimum for me is not having a car.
Yeah.
So it depends from every person to every person.
I get your meaning, but still, living minimal life, I guess, is the same for every single person. When we say minimal, I get what you're saying. You mean that it depends on your situation, on your own lifestyle, and your whatever, who you are. It depends. But still, when we say minimal life, all that we mean to say is to live a simple life. Like, for example, if you have two cars, you can sell one and spend the money on your neighbor who doesn't have enough of facilities, or on the person in your family, not very much far a family, who's in need of money. You can share your car with that person. So that would be also considered the alm that you were talking about. It could be considered the same way.
Yeah, so we're not disagreeing on this.
Yeah.
No,
I'm just saying that when we say minimal, we do not mean that you should have 3 cars or whatever. All we mean to say is that 1 car is going to do the thing that 3 cars are going to do for you. I guess the whole idea behind this minimal lifestyle is to give away the extra things.
So yeah, to keep away the extra things that are out of your need.
Yeah.
Everyone has their own situation.
Yes.
You don't need bookshelves. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you don't have books. I need bookshelves. So every person has their own situation.
Yeah.
And therefore, there could be needs that I have that you don't have, that I need that you don't need. Therefore, the minimum for me is going to be closing this need, and the minimum for you is going to be something else.
Yes.
So therefore, it's relative.
Of course. So, and just right like this, we get to go for a break. Yes, we're talking about minimal lifestyle. A minimalist lifestyle is the process of identifying what is essential in your life and having the courage to eliminate the rest.
Now, of course, look, sometimes living minimal doesn't always mean that you're going to be saving money. Do you agree on that?
It depends.
Because sometimes when you buy something, it doesn't count, it doesn't matter the quantity, but rather the quality of what you buy.
Yeah.
So, for example, I could buy a wooden bookshelf. I could buy the steel bookshelves.
Mm-hmm.
The wooden ones are much more luxurious, you could say.
Yeah.
They last less than the steel ones. And the steel ones last longer and are easier to put and are a lot cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So, I might spend more. Because I need to have a good looking bookshelf. Because when people come over or for filming sake or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it also depends. It could be expensive for me to live a minimal life.
Yeah. Now I ask you a question. Now put all of these things aside and think about the idea behind practicing this lifestyle. What do you think are the reasons for that? I mean, why this lifestyle has been considered as a trend right now?
Is it a trend?
Yeah, it has been so trendy and many people are going for that. If you go for interior designs, you could see that there is this attraction to this sort of lifestyle or to this sort of design, interior designs. So why they do that? The idea behind that, according to you, what is the first thing that will come to your mind?
The first thing that really comes to my mind actually is because I feel like I'm living a minimal life. Mm-hmm. I don't buy anything that I don't need.
So that's first perfect. Of all.
The reason why I don't do it is because I see myself that I don't need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason I see it. It's not just because of an economical problem that I have. Some other families might see, it's because of an economical problem. Some other people, because it's the trend. I want to be in the trend. Mm-hmm. Some other people, because, you know, it feels good. It feels good. I know people who live in some countries that they have to move from house to house. They're renting. You have to move from house to house every year. Therefore, if you have a lot of property, then it's going to be troublesome when you're moving.
Exactly.
So therefore, they live
just like
minimal
traveling.
Lifestyle.
A person who wants to travel for packing a suitcase, they would pack it so light because they're traveling all the time. So the same thing could be applied for those people who are practicing minimalistic lifestyle. And I guess the idea behind that is just to make you focus on the important things instead of, making a mess in your brain so that you have to think about every single detail that is existing in a corner of your house.
That's nice. Like you're saying, they'll be stress-free.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. That is
true. To free up your mind.
Really, really. Just when you don't own the things that you don't need,
mm-hmm.
you're just stress-free about them. You only have what you need and only use what you need. Really just fewer distractions. That's
exactly.
What it is. It really is fewer distractions.
That's the idea, That's the point. It's to reduce the amount of distraction that your brain is going to suffer from. Because in that way, you're going to focus on the more important things. And the whole idea behind minimalistic lifestyle is that. And of course, in art also, when we talk about minimalistic style of writing or of painting or of anything else is to focus on a certain point that you want to say. That's why you're not going to use too much of words and you're not going to make it so messy. And that was all that we had for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
in the limelight.
A senior British military officer claimed the country's forces should be ready for a conflict with Russia and prepare their families for the possibility of a large-scale deployment for war. His advice came after the new chief of the British Army claimed the British military must be able to defeat Russia in direct combat. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Financial Times has covered this story and tells us more. Britain's Secretary of State for Defence, Ben Wallace, has raised the alarm about the imminent war with Russia and China, saying conflict is coming. Ben Wallace said the United Kingdom could be in a direct conflict with Russia and China in the next 7 years and urged for more military spending to purportedly counter the potential threat. Ben Wallace, who had previously admitted that what remains today of the former British Empire's military is an empty shell, urged lawmakers to agree to an increase in Britain's military budget. The official claimed that the world will be a more dangerous, unstable place by the end of the decade and that defence will be more critical in our lives. He explained that the world is seeing the end of the abnormal period of peace post-Cold War, and that a conflict is coming with a range of adversaries around the world. Britain's Defence Secretary has already pleaded to Chancellor of the Exchequer Jeremy Hunt to increase Britain's military budget spending to 2.5% from 2.1% of gross domestic product, or GDP. Ben Wallace had previously stated that Britain's army is hollowed out and underfunded. In the meantime, Britain's Defence Secretary has praised the German government for recently announcing plans to set up a 100 billion euro fund to modernise the German army. He described Berlin's move as an important message for people across Britain, that we're going back to the days where you need to invest in defence. However, as Ben Wallace pushes for more military spending and better support for Ukraine in the West's proxy war against Russia, Britain has been grappling with soaring inflation and high cost of living. The United Kingdom's cost of living crisis, driven by sharp food and energy price rises, has left the British people and British businesses struggling to pay their bills, as Britain's economy experiences its worst conditions in decades. According to market researcher Kantar, Britain's grocery market inflation has soared to 17.1%, hitting prices for milk and eggs the hardest. The increase in basic grocery prices could add to the cost of a family's typical buying basket by £811 per year. The costs of daily use groceries and numerous other items have increased primarily as a result of the rise in energy costs since the start of the war between Russia and Ukraine last year. Economic hardships have prompted most workers in some industrialized countries to stage protests and strikes, asking for fair wages and better working conditions. Agence France-Presse has also covered this story and tells us more. The United Kingdom has announced a series of fresh sanctions against Russia over a special operation in Ukraine targeting Moscow's mineral sector. The coercive measures unveiled recently include a ban on imports of aluminium, diamonds, copper and nickel from Russia. Britain said it would introduce a ban on Russian diamonds and target more entities involved in President Putin's military-industrial complex. London has also sanctioned 86 individuals and companies working for Russia's military, energy, metals and shipping industries. The announcement comes ahead of the summit of the Group of Seven Developed Countries, or G7, in the Japanese city of Hiroshima, a city destroyed by a U.S. atomic bomb in 1945. Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak flew into Hiroshima, Japan for the three-day gathering of world leaders with a self-declared mission to push India into showing greater support for Ukraine. Rishi Sunak said, "One thing we have to keep doing is talking to countries like India and also Brazil. That is going to be in that second part of the summit, which is a good thing." The G7 summit is expected to introduce the host of new sanctions on Moscow. A senior U.S. administration official said there will be upwards of 300 new sanctions against individuals, entities, vessels and aircraft. On Thursday, 18th of May, a European Union official said they might target Russia's multi-billion dollar diamond industry. The official said, "We believe we need to limit exports from Russian trade in this sector." Belgium, a member of the European Union, is among the largest wholesale buyers of Russian diamonds, along with India and the United Arab Emirates. The United States is a major end market for the finished product. Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak claimed, "As today's sanctions announcements demonstrate, the G7 remains unified in the face of the threat from Russia and steadfast in our support for Ukraine." The United States and its allies have imposed a slew of sanctions on Moscow since its special operation in Ukraine began last year. Moscow has downplayed Western sanctions as having no practical effect. Russia began a special operation in Ukraine on 24th of February 2022 as part of a national security measure against the persisting eastern advance of the NATO military alliance, as well as protecting eastern Ukraine's Russian-speaking population against hostile efforts by Kiev. Since then, the United States and most European Union member states have supplied Ukraine with tens of billions of dollars worth of weaponry, including rocket systems, drones, armored vehicles, tanks, communication systems, and despite Russia's repeated warnings that the Western military assistance will only prolong the war, this Western military aid to Ukraine has continued. The English website of Al Jazeera Television Network has also covered the same story. Britain has announced plans to provide Ukraine's Western-backed military with hundreds of long-range attack drones, coinciding with a high-profile visit to London by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who is expected to ask for more weapons. The government declared in a statement recently, "The Prime Minister will confirm the further UK provision of hundreds of air defence missiles and further unmanned aerial systems, including hundreds of new long-range attack drones with a range of over 200 kilometres. The 10 Downing Street statement further vowed, "These will be delivered over the coming months as Ukraine prepares to intensify its attacks against Russian forces, amid a new US-led push to supply Kiev with massive amounts of advanced weaponry in anticipation of widely publicized spring offensive to retake territory lost to the Russians." Prime Minister Rishi Sunak claimed in a boastful statement ahead of his talks with Volodymyr Zelensky, "This is a crucial moment in Ukraine's resistance to a terrible war of aggression they did not choose or provoke." Rishi Sunak's remarks was described by local observers as quite ironic, in view of Britain's heavy involvement in destructive US-led wars of aggression against Afghanistan and Iraq, amid its history of waging military interventions and establishing colonial rules in countries across the globe. Britain became the first Western country to provide Kiev's forces with a long-range cruise missile named the Storm Shadow. The Storm Shadow is a turbojet-powered missile that cruises at 0.8 Mach to a maximum range of 560 kilometres. However, Moscow has warned that it will hold the countries supplying long-range weaponry to Kiev responsible for any attack on Russian territory, and that it reserves the right to respond in kind. Britain, after the United States, is the second largest provider of advanced weaponry and armament to Ukraine. The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in recent days has also held talks with the leaders of Germany, Italy and France, demanding more supply of weaponry for Kiev.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, effects of satisfaction and submission to God. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of the effects of satisfaction and submission to God in the Islamic lifestyle. One of the effects that we can talk about is that the one who submits to the God and who is satisfied on what God has made for him is that he gains the rewards of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Obviously, we know that in any system, whether it's the family system, the social system, in the educational system, in the environment where we work, if we work or if we perform or if we live according to what it's been set for us, and we are satisfied to that and we are submitted to those things that are set for us, obviously, the ones who are our bosses, our parents, or the ones who's basically running the system, they are happy from us because they are seeing that we are submitted, we respect for what they have made for us. For example, the rules that are set in a company, if we follow those rules, if we follow the handbook that is given to us, it means that we are respecting the company. We are respecting, we are submitted to that, and obviously due to the submission and the satisfaction that we show to them, due to that, we work properly, and the things go smoothly even for the company, and it's very easy. It becomes easy for them to manage the things when people are submissive. Therefore, we can imagine this to the creation of the mankind by the God, and therefore we must submit to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the effects of satisfaction and submission to God. And we were talking about being one of the effects is that we get the rewards of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. What did we say is that we need to submit to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We need to be sure the satisfaction to the rules that are set by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Obviously, there is a handbook for us, and that is Quran. We need to follow this book. We need to live according to this book. And therefore, when we live according to this book, when we live our lives according to this guidance that is being sent by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and we are submitted to that, it shows that Allah becomes razi. He's happy from us. This is the rizā or satisfaction of Allah. So we are having two ways. So when we obey the orders of Allah, there are rewards for us. We gave the example of the company in the family system. Even when children, they obey their parents try to give them more. They try to bring more. They try to give rewards to them. And this is one of the ways. And that's why the Prophet ﷺ has also said that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give you more than you obey him. And on the day of judgment, when we are in need, we are in faqr, we are in need. On the day of judgment, where our deeds are in front of us and we know that we haven't done anything, on that day, Allah will take our hands. He will support us. He will back us. Why? Because in this world, we were submitted to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We showed satisfaction on what Allah gave us. And on the day of judgment, He will help us because He is happy from us. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to IRIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
The limelight. Russian Finance Minister Anton Silonov has said EU's short-sighted policy is hurting the bloc more than Moscow. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay with us, please. RT noted the West is running out of options for targeting Moscow after multiple rounds of sanctions backfired instead of crippling the Russian economy as intended. Finance Minister Anton Silonov told RT recently. All these restrictions have boomeranged, he argued, noting the worsening cost of living crisis in Western countries, soaring inflation, and a decline in living standards. Silonov added, therefore, these countries are pursuing a short-sighted policy, introducing regular packages of restrictions and sanctions. According to the finance minister, Russia is pursuing an independent policy, trying to minimize the impact of the restrictions that are being introduced against it. Therefore, we are developing our financial independence in the face of a tight budget and budgetary rules targeted inflation. Russian finance minister said, noting that the Russian government is also seeking independence in terms of payment instruments. He said, when Western countries introduce new packages of restrictions, we take anti-sanction measures and we see that we are succeeding. insisting that Russian economy would reach positive growth rates this year in 2023. He also pointed to low inflation, which is lower than in Western countries, and the lowest unemployment rate, adding that real wages in Russia are growing. He said, therefore, our policy of responding to the sanction packages is yielding results. We see that we are headed in the right direction. According to Silanov, there is a change in global geopolitical formations where countries with developing economies are squeezing out the so-called developed nations, with the latter introducing various restrictions and sanctions, including in settlements. However, those restrictions have diminished global confidence in the US dollar and the euro, he said. Russia has also been forced to replace settlements in so-called freely convertible currencies with settlements in reliable currencies. For us, a reliable currency is the national currency and the currencies of friendly countries that have no problems in transferring money for goods and services supplied, he said. Commenting on Russia's push for de-dollarization, Silanov explained that the abandonment of the dollar and the euro is proceeding gradually. He stated, we do not set ourselves the task of giving them up tomorrow. We use them, but we are trying to switch to more reliable units of account. The finance minister noted that Russia and China are settling about 70% of their economic transactions in their national currencies and will continue to do so. According to Bloomberg, sanctions imposed on Russia are pushing the global economy closer towards a major crisis, Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov recently said. The official was commenting on reports that G7 members are considering a near-total ban on exports to Russia. Peskov told journalists when asked about the potential G7 embargo, we realize that the US and nations in the EU are considering new additional sanctions. All sanctions which have been imposed on our nation and new moves which may be under consideration at the moment in Brussels and Washington will certainly hit the world economy too. He added, that can only exacerbate the trends towards a world economic crisis. Also, according to Press TV, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has admitted that economic sanctions used against countries by the U.S. put the dollar's dominance at risk. As the U.S. has continued to weaponize the dollar, countries are seeking alternatives, from creating new common currencies to using local currencies. Nations are trying to find a safe and equitable way to trade instead of being at the whims of a hegemony that can decide overnight to confiscate a country's money or cut it off from the international financial system. Russia launched its de-dollarization policy when the West slapped economic sanctions against the country. After Russia launched its special operation in eastern Ukraine in February 2022, the U.S. led a massive wave of financial sanctions against Moscow. The biggest moves were the decision by the West to freeze nearly half of Russia's foreign currency reserves and also the removal of major Russian banks from SWIFT, an interbank messaging service that facilitates international payments. The backdrop of sanctions introduced by Western regimes against Russia, a major global energy producer and exporter, prompted China to decide to ditch the dollar in international trade as well. Bank of Russia records show that the Chinese yuan has become a major player in Russian foreign trade. India, a major importer of Russian energy, has also taken several steps towards shifting away from the greenback to rubles and rupees in mutual trade with Moscow.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ideal University Student brings change in thinking and reality of the society and world. The following is part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with university students and representatives of student associations in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on April 18th, 2023.
Students should not drown themselves in the internet. While the internet does exist in the country, despite all the things that are said here and there, social media exists and the internet exists. Some people sit around waiting to be flooded with analysis, news, and content from the internet. That's wrong. You need to seize control of the social media. You should be the ones to direct it. Your thoughts, news, and analysis should go out on the internet, not the other way around. These are things that plague student activities. Sometimes caring, faithful students ask us what their duty is. Sometimes they write to me, or at times they come to our office and talk with our friends there. You can sense their concern and their willingness to do something. One of the important duties is to remove the impurities from important student activities, which are a great opportunity and something valuable for the country.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
One more topic about students. I don't wish to answer your questions now with the things that I am saying. I mean, this is not what I'm trying to do now. I can't do this in this limited time. I want you to have a basis for your movement. In other words, organize your movement by looking at the long horizons ahead of you. You're seeking progress. The best youth in our country are mainly our university students, and you pious students want to move forward. I want this goal to be reached. Look at the distant horizon. They ask me, in your opinion, what is the duty of an ideal, ambitious student who is thinking about the future? This is my answer. The first thing is to bring about a change in the thinking and reality of your society, and then to bring about a change in the thinking and reality of the world. Does it surprise you that a student can change the reality of the world? It is not surprising at all. You are students today, but tomorrow, today's students will become directors in politics, and they will administer an important part of the country. The country's officials today used to be students like you, and now they are busy running the country's affairs. They are busy with managing the country's politics. A economy, and diplomacy. Today's student is tomorrow's philosopher. He or she is tomorrow's researcher.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The Islamic Jihad resistance movement has organized a celebration event in Damascus countryside, marking its victory against Israel in the recent battle in the Gaza Strip. In a televised speech, Secretary General of the movement, Ziad Nakhale, announced the victory against the Israeli regime, expressing pride in the people of Gaza, who he said manufactured their own weapons with the help of member countries of the resistance front.
We succeeded in the battle and we preserved Palestinians' unity. We proved to the enemy our continuous readiness to engage in battle after another in defense of our people. Any assassination operation will be met with a strong, clear and painful response in which Tel Aviv or other Israeli cities will be in the range of our rockets.
The event was attended by representatives of Syria-based Palestinian factions. Speakers said Palestinians and resistance groups showed unprecedented unity through the joint operations room while retaliating against Israel. They rejected any concessions with Israel and refused to acknowledge any political settlement with the enemy.
We underline the importance of national unity and armed resistance, which is the only option we have. We reject concessions, Oslo Accords, or any security coordination or recognition of Israel. We call for boycotting Israel politically and economically and punishing the enemy for the crimes against Palestinians.
Videos were played on a large screen showing the retaliatory battle codenamed Revenge of the Free, including images of the Islamic Jihad leaders who were assassinated or lost their lives while confronting Israeli attacks. Resistance movements like the Islamic Jihad believe that resistance is not an option, but in fact a national duty which is based on the legitimate right of Palestinians to fight against the Israeli regime. And for long, it has been the only successful deterrent against Israeli aggressions in occupied Palestine. Hamad Ali, Damascus Countryside.
Just a couple of weeks ago, there were hundreds of refugees, mainly from African and Middle Eastern countries, sleeping on the streets outside the main asylum application centre in Brussels. Authorities have since cleared the area. The refugees have fled to neighbouring countries or have been crammed into emergency accommodation. A few remain in the area, but say their situation would be different if they came from Ukraine.
Only because we are Afghan, because we come from Syria, because we don't have the same color, because we don't have same culture, but it will be not the reason. Of course, a lot of people, we have the same mind. I can work, I can do everything.
When you come here from Ukraine, you get everything. Accommodation, food, work, everything. If you are from somewhere else, as a refugee, you do not get anything.
If you look, I cut also myself, because we don't feel good in camp.
Sometimes you want to die?
Yes, I want to die. You look at my hands, I cut it my hands too much with blades. I do it too much. Because what is it, life, eat and going to sleep?
A debate in the European Parliament has heard that EU nations are erecting borders on land and strengthening aggressive coast guard services at sea. The bloc pays billions of euro to outside countries to stop refugees from attempting to travel here, unless they are from Ukraine.
The EU slogan is, break the business model of smugglers. But what we do is feeding them by blocking all pathways to protection.
There is a heavy far-right anti-refugee presence in the Parliament.
Europe needs a policy based on strong border control.
But many legislators are calling for a more civilized approach.
We already fund third countries like Libya, actually militias over there, to build camps, to host people there. And we see murder, we see rape, and we do not see a humane solution.
Key EU figures are currently in Hiroshima, Japan, for a G7 meeting. 350,000 people were living there when their closest ally, the United States, dropped its catastrophic atomic bomb in 1945. More support for Ukraine is high on the agenda. Critics say the last thing on their minds is providing refuge to those fleeing countries they helped destabilize in Africa, Asia, and the Middle East. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
For the first time since massive regular protests began in January, the French government has held discussions with union leaders regarding a 2-year hike to the retirement age. A notable problem with that long delay is that the age hike has already been forced into law via a decree by President Emmanuel Macron. Public opinion is overwhelmingly against the change, but the government is standing firm, even though anger is rising to threatening levels nationwide. The First Lady's nephew was recently beaten by protesters over the age hike. Over 60% of the country wants the Prime Minister fired, and neither Macron nor his ministers can appear in public without protesters noisily banging casserole pans.
There's enormous anger right now. Macron has destroyed our social services, given huge tax gifts to the rich, persecuted injustices while allowing the far right to demonstrate without barely any police presence, and this is not even a complete list. People just want to live normally, but the Macron era is one of sadness and poverty.
Unions say the country will not get back to normal unless the age hike is revoked, but France has seen massive anti-government unrest regularly for well over a decade, and usually over far-right austerity measures. France and the European Union continue to be hounded by accusations that they are anti-democratic, and the latest of many French presidential decrees has only further increased dissatisfaction and dissent.
There is growing realization that our major national policies are decided in Brussels, and that our president is a mere puppet. We're also subservient to Washington. Simply look at what we're doing in Ukraine for more proof. So there's no hope that we'll have democracy during the last 4 years of Macron's term. But if we don't get it in 2027, things will explode.
Union leaders left the closed-door meeting calling it not useful and a one-way monologue. The pension age hike has overshadowed other crises, such as record inflation, the arming of the unrest in Ukraine, and stagnant wages. But all of those remain unresolved flashpoints as well. Barring a surprise reversal from the government, unions are planning a 14th day of nationwide strikes next month. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Hundreds of Orthodox Jews protested outside the UK Parliament building on Tuesday over fears the establishment will begin regulating traditional Jewish faith schools known as yeshivot. Protest leaders made clear they considered any legislation targeting unregulated Jewish religious institutions as anti-Semitic, and they may be forced to flee Britain to protect their religious freedoms from unwelcome reforms.
Today, we face a concerning challenge as politicians attempt to push through